From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Alan Young. The Democratic National Convention kicked off last night in Chicago. The opening night focused on topics like abortion rights, the power of unions, and the proposed Project 2025 that is widely condemned by Democrats. It also featured a number of high-profile speakers, including President Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, and an appearance by Vice President and presumptive presidential nominee Kamala Harris. The passing of the torch from Biden to Harris is just the latest step in her political rise, which included a previous run for president in 2020. But with the renewed national spotlight on her again, how have Harris' political policies adapted to meet the current moment? And what does her candidacy mean for women of color? Jamila King is the editorial director for Mother Jones, and she has been covering Kamala Harris for many years, since Harris' early political days in San Francisco. She joins us now. Jamila, welcome to Insight.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You grew up in San Francisco. When did Kamala Harris first enter your radar, and when did you start covering her as a journalist?
Sure. So I was born and raised in San Francisco, and my family had some sort of personal interactions with the criminal justice system. I grew up in San Francisco's Fillmore, Western Addition area. And, you know, I went off to college, decided I wanted to be a journalist. And so when I came back to San Francisco from Southern California, in the early 2000s, this was a time when Kamala Harris was sort of beginning her political ascent, beginning her political career. So we actually, I came across her work when I was an editor at a publication called Youth Outlook that was housed at the time at New America Media. And Kamala Harris was rolling out her now signature program Back on Track, which essentially brought young interns into our office, and we would sort of train them in storytelling and digital media. So that's when I sort of first came across her work. Since then, I've been a political reporter at Mother Jones and several other publications, and I really started covering her in earnest when she got to the Senate. So in early 2017, I shadowed her and her team at a prison visit in Chowchilla, and got to sort of see some of her early attempts at sort of building a criminal justice platform on a national scale.
Well, let's talk about that, because was that the trip where you saw there's the incarcerated people making flags, and that kind of struck you, and the vice president has since talked about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the trip was sort of a, I don't want to call it a goodwill trip, but essentially, Kamala Harris was touring the sort of prison's programming to show, demonstrate how the state was actually investing in folks and investing in the rehabilitation. So this was my first sort of trip like that. And I was just kind of shocked at the symbolism of going into a prison and seeing a flag making workshop. We went in, and one of the workshops that we saw several different types of workshops throughout the day. But one of the first stops was to this big sort of industrial space where incarcerated women were, you know, sewing, dyeing, and putting together flags that would fly atop California state buildings. And so it was kind of a very bizarre moment for me. But in her retelling, you know, it's a moment where it is really clear to her that she's representing all Californians, and that includes, you know, incarcerated people. So, you know, it was an interesting moment, but it was definitely, I think, a place where she felt comfortable, because she'd spent so much of her career in law enforcement, both as a district attorney and an attorney general. So, you know, and obviously as a prosecutor. So she was comfortable sort of in those interactions with prison staff, with prison administration, and with folks who were incarcerated themselves.
And this kind of gets us into this really fascinating and rare lens or beat that you've taken to in your reporting on Kamala Harris, which is Black women engaged in power. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, you know, the past probably decade, I've covered racial justice broadly. I covered a lot of political organizing, sort of the rise of the movement for Black lives. And one of the questions that I kept running into was, you know, will these systems change if the people who are running them look like the people who are affected by them? And So that kind of led me to ask this question, which has really informed my reporting ever since, which was, you know, how do Black women engage with political power? And I decided to take that question on from, you know, both the perspective of powerful people like Kamala Harris, but also from the perspective of community organizers, people who don't have as much sort of political capital to invest in our democracy, but are still nonetheless working incredibly hard and incredibly tirelessly for, you know, their communities, their families, and the causes they really care about. So that has really kind of informed my work for the past decade or so. And then, you know, it just so happens that at the moment that I was asking that question, Donald Trump had just been elected president, and there was a lot of, I think, strategizing, but also momentum around getting Black women in office. Black women have long been the most supportive voting bloc for Democrats. And sort of the idea was, you know, you don't see a big return on that investment in the lives of Black women. And so, you know, that led me not only to cover Kamala Harris, but I also covered Stacey Abrams' run for governor in Georgia in 2017. I also covered Congresswoman Lucy McBath, whose son, Jordan, was shot and killed at a gas station in Jacksonville, Florida. I also covered Carol Fife, who is now on Oakland City Council. And she kind of came to prominence as a housing advocate in Oakland, who was fighting for affordability for, you know, Black and brown families. So, you know, that question has, like I said, been at the sort of core of my reporting, but I think it's also sort of at the core of a lot of these narratives that we're seeing with Kamala Harris as she kind of enters a new stratosphere of, you know, notoriety and political prominence in her own right. You know, it's hard to pin her down politically for a lot of people because California politics are so unlike so many other places in the country. So, you know, I think that has, you know, definitely been something that a lot of, I think, national reporters are learning how to reckon with. And it's something that I've sort of reckoned with my whole career.
That's interesting. I want to explore that more. Let's talk about the news of the day. Let's talk about last night, the first night of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. The president made a speech about more of his legacy than about cheering on the nominee, which is understandable. He did repeat that favored Democratic talking point about a prosecutor facing off against someone with 34 felonies. Let's hear a bit about what the president had to say.
We made the largest investment, Kamala and I, in public safety ever. Now, the murder rate is falling faster than any time in history. Violent crime has dropped to the lowest level of more than 50 years. And crime will keep coming down when we put a prosecutor in the Oval Office instead of a convicted felon. MAGA Republicans found out the power of women in 2022. And Donald Trump is going to find out the power of women in 2024.
Jamila, when we consider what the president said last night about the vice president, as well as Hillary Clinton's celebratory line about the glass ceiling finally breaking, what was your takeaway from that first night about how the speakers spoke about Vice President Harris?
Yeah, I think that last night, the first night of the Democratic National Convention, was really about sort of a successful transfer of power in the Democratic Party. And specifically, it's about honoring the service and the work of Joe Biden. I think you saw that again and again. And, you know, I think it was less about having Kamala Harris in the spotlight. But of course, she was the night. She was sort of the reason for the celebration. And so, you know, I think that you really see in the comments of Hillary Clinton, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you really sort of see a lot of the shoulders that Kamala Harris are standing on. A lot of the political groundwork that has been put, you know, down for generations. You know, there was also a really moving sort of tribute to Jesse Jackson, who, of course, ran for president twice in the 1980s. And that was really interesting for me because as a reporter, you know, part of what I have done by digging into her history was sort of examining her time at Howard University as a student. And, you know, she was a student at Howard around the time that Jesse Jackson was running for president, and looking at how that may have influenced her, how that influenced people of her generation, to sort of see that generational handoff of power, so to speak, right? Like Jesse Jackson has long been a champion of civil rights, of course, and to see him sort of move into a new sphere of influence was, I think, probably hugely inspiring for her, and showed that, you know, you can have sort of multiple public facing political lives.
It is this really interesting and what feels like historic handoff. And there's been a lot of mention in the media lately about this a honeymoon period where there's a lot of excitement and buzz. Do you think that's the case so far? And where do you think the focus goes from here? What's the next chapter?
Well, right now, there's a lot of focus on Kamala Harris as the person, not necessarily the politician. I think we will get into policies and politics after this convention. I think you've already seen a little bit of it with some of the protests that are happening in Chicago on the ground, especially among young folks who are advocating for a ceasefire in Gaza. But, you know, certainly this last month is sort of unprecedented in the history of American democracy. We've never seen a moment like this. That, you know, is driven by, you know, Joe Biden's decision this late in the season to drop out of the race and then anoint, you know, essentially like back Kamala Harris. And so it's been a hugely inspiring time. I think a lot of supporters of the Democratic Party, a lot of people who were maybe on the fence, are now activated in ways that they weren't before. Sometimes that activism isn't always, or that activation isn't always super positive, right? I think there are people who are scrutinizing the campaign and the Democratic platform's policies a lot more than they would have before, simply because they weren't planning to come out and vote in November. Now I think that's certainly on the table. So I think we will see a lot of movement on her policies, but I also feel like, you know, this is a moment too where she can sort of ride this wave of goodwill. And this is a rare moment, I think, in the past several years where we've seen Donald Trump not really be able to dictate the terms of engagement. And she's kind of doing that on her own terms. And I think that's a really important and obviously effective strategy for November.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Mother Jones editorial director Jamila King about Vice President Kamala Harris and the impact of her bid for the presidency. And Jamila, I want to get back into this idea of Black women in power. Can you talk about how challenging it can be for Black people, particularly Black women, to tell their personal stories when running for office?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, I think one thing that is interesting about Kamala Harris in this moment is that there is a lot of interest in her personal story and her personal biography, but she's actually throughout her career been pretty reticent to put her personal life forward. I think that there are a few reasons for that. I think often with women generally and Black women specifically, you see a lot of scrutiny around their personal lives, a lot of sort of scrutiny that we don't apply to men or to white men or to Black men even. You know, you've already seen a bit about Kamala Harris's dating history, right? We don't really get into that with other politicians. And so, you know, that's something that I think she's been really careful to avoid. But I think it's also about how she was raised. You know, she was raised by an immigrant mother who was very clear about, you know, not kind of resting on your laurels and not, you know, sort of talking about yourself too much. Instead, you want to talk about the work. Now, when you're in sort of local office, I think that tends to work a little bit better because you can focus on the numbers, the statistics, how you and your team have, you know, meaningfully changed the reality for people's lives. But I think on the national level, you do find that she's kind of struggled in this moment because she has to, that's part of the job. Right. That's part of the job of being a president, running for president, being a figure. You have to create this sort of narrative that people can relate to or identify with, or even sort of, you know, be at odds with. But nonetheless, you want something that people can latch onto. And so I think we're starting to see that. It'll be interesting to see how that develops over the course of the next week. I'll be really curious to see sort of what personal narrative she invokes in her acceptance speech on Thursday. But, you know, certainly there's been so much scrutiny, and I think you can see this everywhere in the Democratic Party, of Black women who are just kind of vilified in a number of ways. You've seen that with Representative Maxine Waters. You've seen that with Barbara Lee. You've seen that with several, several people. So I think it's a very fine line. And again, being able to sort of dictate the terms on your own, in this instance for Kamala Harris, is really important. And that's why this sort of honeymoon period is so useful.
Jamila, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem.
Jamila King is the editorial director at Mother Jones. Up next, California passed a bill 2 years ago to protect children on social media, but its constitutionality has continued to be debated in court. We'll break down the latest ruling on the law. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Alan Young.